From Chicago, this is Inside Politics, a weekly program of political discussion and intrigue with occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by a panel of political insiders, power brokers, and public servants. I'm your host, Bruce Dumont. Thank you very much for joining us this week for our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, coming to you from the Radio Hall of Fame at the Museum of Broadcast Communications at the Chicago Cultural Center. And thank you very much for being with us this week. And this week, we inaugurate our new flagship station, our commercial flagship station, WLS, FM and AM in Chicago, 50,000 watts, one of America's great radio stations. And it is indeed a pleasure to be part of the WLS family. Having grown up in the city of Chicago, WLS was the station when I was growing up in this city. And it is great to be part of the WLS family and to have them as part of the Radio Hall of Fame network. Also, WFSU in Tallahassee, Florida, is the new flagship station of our public radio stations. Caroline Austin, an earlier supporter of this program, we're being fed live in Tallahassee, Florida State University, also live in Rochester, New York, on WXXI AM. Bud Lowell, we thank you. And our friends at Western Illinois University, WIUW-FM, Dory Kane in Macomb, Illinois, we also welcome all of the other continuing stations as we begin our second year of national syndication this week on Inside Politics. And a new member of the network this week, WGVU-AM in Grand Rapids, Michigan, Gerald Ford Country, home of Grand Valley University. Our toll-free telephone number is 1-800-723-8289. 1-800-723-8289. If you're carrying the show live, hop on the line right now. We'd like to get your thoughts and opinions on this past week in politics. Let us now welcome our guests. They are the president of the City Club of Chicago, founder of the Republican Assembly of Illinois, our card-carrying conservative Republican. Say hello to Tom Roser. Tom, thank you very much for being with us today. We also welcome a member of the steering committee of the National Women's Political Caucus and a columnist for Today's Chicago Woman, our resident liberal Democrat, Grace Kamikowicz. Grace, thank you very much. We also welcome the director of the Catholic Advocates for Lesbian and Gay Rights, a full-time gay activist since 1980. Rick Garcia joins us, as gays in the military will be one of our topics of discussion this week. And we also welcome a veteran public affairs consultant who was former Assistant Secretary of Defense for Public Affairs under Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld and a former Deputy Press Secretary to President Gerald Ford from the great state of Michigan, Bill Greener. We thank you all for being with us today on Inside Politics. Time now for Know and Tell. That's part of our program where we ask our guests to share with us, if they have something interesting to share, a know and tell that they will share for the very first time. And we begin this week with Bill Greener. Bill?
I expect that sometime this week that President-elect Clinton will name Admiral Crowell to be the head of the commission to study the very subject of gays in the military.
So it's going to be studied. There will not be just an automatic waving of the executive wand and making it happen.
Well, I think he'll get a decision out of the... He'll make a decision, but I think that he will have the commission study it from all points of view.
Tom Roser.
President Bush was told today that an informal study of some of the issues before the Supreme Court indicate a likely Supreme Court support on the issue on a test case of gays in the military.
Grace.
Well, despite his past statements opposing homosexuals in the military, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Colin Powell, is acknowledging civilian control, and he's already given thought to how to implement any executive order or change in the Code of Military Justice.
So we have heard his last public utterance of support of the current plan and ban? Powell has already said that he
My personal feeling on that is that he's going to be very quiet until Mr. Clinton takes over. But right now, the commander-in-chief of the military forces is George Bush.
Let us talk about this issue that has dominated much of the pre-inaugural hoopla in Washington. And that is Bill Clinton's decision to call for a dropping of the ban on gays in the military. Rick Garcia, is it politically correct or is it politically stupid?
Oh, I think it's politically correct. It's long overdue. Clearly, with the Republican administration, we didn't see any hope of that ban being lifted. But Bill Clinton got great support from the lesbian and gay community, received over $3 million from the lesbian and gay community, and some suggest up to 89% of the gay vote. So I think it's wise of him to fulfill one of his first campaign promises and to do it quickly.
Does it create problems on Capitol Hill, Tom?
I think it does, initially, because there's going to be such a great change on Capitol Hill that a lot of congressmen are going to have to check back with their constituencies. Generally speaking, it's going to be more difficult for Democrats than Republicans. I think it's going to be quite difficult for them.
Bill Greener.
Well, I think, you know, really it's a moot discussion of whether it's going to be done. The question is how it's going to be done. And I think that is inevitable. The traditional argument in the Defense Department for, lo, these many years was particularly gays and liberals were not out. Gays were not out in the open.
Or liberals were not out in the open in the
military. Yes, they were, too.
Oh, come on!
I meant the gays were not out in the open. And the traditional argument against having them serve in the military was that, therefore, they could be blackmailed once it was discovered that they were, and therefore they became a bad security risk. Well, once it's out in the open, that holds no water.
Grace?
Well, I think that's absolutely true. And the thought that any change does not have to be done carefully is crazy, and this is going to have to be done carefully. But the same thing is true. There is still sensitivity training on integration and on including women in the military, and that's going to be an ongoing thing with homosexuals in the military also. They will simply have three kinds of sensitivity courses.
I think that the answer is, of course, there are gays in the military, always have been. That's not the issue. Procedurally, it's the affirmative side of it, where gays attest that they are gay, which causes the trouble. And I think from the standpoint of Bill Clinton, because this is a program about procedures, I think his initial wish would be to focus a laser beam on the economy, and that this came out now, I think, is going to detract from that and distract from it.
There's a certain logic, though, in what he said about conduct being the issue, and in light of the problems that the Navy is having, for example, with tailhook, etc., it's very clear that conduct is a problem for the heterosexual community in the military as well as the homosexual community, and I think that's going to mute this whole thing.
Does it create a problem, though, really, of focusing? Because, again, it has dominated much of the first, 10
days of
the euphoria. Well, there are issues. I mean, the economy is not been solved
overnight. Of course,
there's other news.
I mean, all he's got to do is name one cabinet officer, and he could do that.
But why should he be different?
But the point is that it is the first real thicket that he stepped into, and he's really into it, and there's no question that he's got himself a problem. And the fact that it's easy enough to say it's going to be done, and the question is how it's going to be done, but how it's going to be done is not an easy answer.
It's a problem only until the next issue comes up, and there's no reason he should be stampeded into naming a cabinet officer before he's ready to, because no one names a cabinet officer until after Thanksgiving.
I think Bill and I are talking about this, that as we look at the next president of the United States, his wish, I would imagine, is to focus on the things that he was elected really to do. And the first thing he was, according to Mr. Carville's sign, it's the economy, stupid. So I would think that if Mr. Clinton, and you're an old oppressed person, I would think Mr. Clinton would want to have that focus on it consistently as to what he doesn't have to name a cabinet officer.
Well, I don't care what, I just use that as an example.
Right.
I mean,
all right, now let me ask the question about the media. Has the media gravitated to this issue and put it on the front burner more so than it should be, in your view, Rick?
I think the media has gravitated toward this issue. It's a hot topic. It's a very hot issue. And that's why we see so much emphasis placed on it. As a gay activist, I'm pleased that there is this much attention, because for too many years, we've been an invisible minority. The issue hasn't been dealt with. It hasn't been dealt with openly or in decent kinds of ways. And so it's kind of refreshing to see that the president-elect is dealing with this almost on a daily basis.
We also said a couple of weeks ago on this program that maybe in the first month or so, you would have the president, after he becomes president, you would have the president reach out to some of the progressive members of his coalition and frankly, appease them early, because later on, when it comes to dollars and cents, he may have to go back and offend some of those communities as he comes back towards the center when the elections in 2 years come around. Does he have to get all of that progressive agenda dealt with early, Bill?
No, I don't think necessarily. I think he's doing it in a rather orderly fashion, in all honesty. But the fact is that this is news. It is the first big stumbling block that he's run into.
And he said,
and the
media
is going to cover it. And Grace, you can't complain about the media covering him. He's the president-elect of the United States.
I'm not complaining about it, and I'm quite the contrary. Look, they tried to cover the poor little cat, and you saw what happened. That became a big
thing. That
isn't
neutered.
There is. That's right, and still has his claws too, and that's the thing is they're starving for news, and this was a question they asked that elicited a response from him, and next thing you know, all hell broke loose. Well, that's fine. I think it's there's nothing wrong with it distracting from, and that's what I think this is. It's a distraction while he goes about the business of concentrating his mental processes on the economy.
Right. In that case, you think it's healthy.
I didn't say it wasn't healthy.
The other point that I think is important here is that while this is a difficult issue, gays in the military is difficult, it is not anywhere near as difficult as the economy. And so it's something that he can implement a campaign promise and set a tone for his administration and do it rather quickly rather than some of the harder issues that are going to take a longer period of time.
You can't just say implement and disregard the effect it's going to have on the military itself.
Well, I don't think
you say that it's an easier decision than solving the economy.
Yes.
Some would argue that is correct, but there are others that would argue that it may even be more difficult because of the depth of the resistance that this change will have within the military.
Let's just say that for Republicans, generally speaking, this was a salutary decision by Bill Clinton. Because what it does, it alienates part of that Clinton constituency, which used to belong to us, the shot and beer crowd, which because of the economy voted for Clinton, but which still has residual traditional social values.
I want to tell you something. You know, the public as a whole really is not terribly engaged in this. And I'm talking about the majority of the public. And within the armed forces, I'm willing to bet that there are a group of leaders who are opposed to it and that the rank and file is not real panicky about it.
Don't bet a lot of money on
that. How many people in the audience here in Chicago think that dropping the ban on gays in the military is a good idea? Applaud. How many think that it's a bad idea? Nobody.
It's just a cross-section of America is what we have. I mean, these people also want statehood for, after all, D.C. I mean,
absolutely.
It's just wonderful to come here and have that bracing a liberal climate.
You're a minority, and just get used to it. If you continue thinking like a minority, you will remain a minority party.
But that is not the situation within the military itself, Grace. That is not a minority view.
Among the rank and file, I'll bet
among
it
the
is.
Rank, well, I think you would lose a lot of money
if you bet anything on it. A minority view? You know, one of the quotes that was attributed to this earlier this week is that, and I would like to get your response, most of the younger people in the armed services today are more tolerant of different lifestyles. End of quote. Do you agree with that, Rick?
Oh, absolutely.
Grace?
I do not.
I do. I think most people, younger people today, are more tolerant of different lifestyles in the military, out of the military, walking the streets, not walking the streets, riding in cars or riding horses.
You're very wise.
Bill Greener, Tom Roser, Grace Gomenkiewicz, and Rick Garcia are joining us this week on Inside Politics. I'm Bruce Dumont, coming to you from the Radio Hall of Fame in Chicago on the Radio Hall of Fame Network.
What's clear? New crystal clear Amoco Ultimate Gasoline. What isn't? All other premium gasolines. What's clear? New improved Amoco Ultimate is the only premium that's crystal clear. Crystal clear. Because it's refined an extra step to remove harmful impurities called PNAs. PNAs, what are they? Impurities other premiums leave in every tankful. Harmful impurities that can rob your engine of performance and contribute to hydrocarbon exhaust emissions. What's clear? For every 15 gallons, Amoco removes about one pint of impurities, helping to give you unsurpassed performance and a cleaner environment. It's no wonder that Amoco Ultimate is rated the highest quality gasoline by motorists. What's clear? If you use premium, the reason to switch to Amoco Ultimate is crystal clear. Crystal clear Amoco Ultimate. New in this area. You expect more from a leader.
National support for Inside Politics is provided by City and State, Crane's national newspaper of city and state government, and by MCI Communications Corporation, the nation's second largest long-distance carrier. Our telephone number is 1-800-723-8289. 1-800-723-8289. How do you feel about the issue of gays in the military? We'll talk a little bit more about the subject, then we'll move on to other aspects of this past week in politics. What about, you mentioned, Bill, and you spent a number of years in the Defense Department. You talked about that the primary objection was that homosexuals, if they were closeted and it was revealed, that there would be some security risk. Aren't there other more practical concerns that the military...
That may be, but that was the prime thing that would allow the military to control the ban on it, was the fact that they were security risks. This was the traditional argument. And as I said, there are plenty of problems. And Grace, while I think that you may know about a lot of things, since I'm the only one on the panel that spent a career in the military, I got to tell you, I think I have a little more informed view of what the rank and file would do with it.
I'd like to get Rick's response to a quote from J. Craig Fong, who is with the Lambda Legal Defense Fund, and the Lambda Foundation is a homosexual rights group. He said, "For the 2 or 4 years I elect to serve my country, I could either be celibate or to do it off duty or on leave. I just want to be able to serve my country," end of quote. Is it realistic to ask anyone, whether they're homosexual or heterosexual, frankly, to put their lifestyle on hold for 2 to 4 years? Is that realistic?
I don't think that, from that quote, I don't think that he's putting his lifestyle on hold at all. I think there's a difference between being a homosexual person and the conduct and the activity. And I think Bill Clinton made that clear this week in some of his remarks. And I think this is what this gentleman's talking about, that it is not a matter of being a celibate or putting a lifestyle on hold. It is just being open about who you are. What he does in his off time, I mean, he's not going to be participating in homogenital behavior in the workplace.
Well, that is, I think, one thing that probably would need clarification and is certainly part of this sensitivity training that I think Grace would talk about. Because I know in USA Today, there was a quote of a veteran military officer who said, you know, there would be, you know, 165 men in a room, there'd be about 20 or 30 showers, and there would be homosexuals in the midst. And people have all sorts of impressions of what would be going on there.
First of all,
people's minds.
There are homosexuals in their midst even as we speak. In the showers this morning and in the beds last night, they were there. They are there. All we're talking about is, are those people going to be able to be honest who they are? Or are they going to have to lie and say, no, I'm not gay, I'm not lesbian? And that's what it boils down to. It's simply a matter of honesty.
I thought there was such a thing as a right of privacy, which all liberals attest to, that says that a person has to affirm or deny. For example, I think that one must also look at the majority in the military and the tensions it creates among them. Yes, there is homophobia, but there's also homophilia. And how does a person deal with somebody who is an avowed gay? If, for example, a person becomes condescending, that is an insult. If, in fact, I suppose a person backs up, that is an insult. So consequently, the burden of nervousness is going to be on the heterosexual majority. And that is what I think a President-elect Clinton is probably going to learn about.
And exactly, and I think that nervousness should be there, because the hundreds and thousands of lesbian and gay women who have served their country well have been under the nervousness of discovery, have been under the nervousness of having their careers go down the toilet just for being honest about who they are.
We don't want those poor dears to be nervous, but the question is this, that they themselves are taking the affirmative action by announcing and pronouncing their sexuality preference.
Absolutely.
So consequently, they put it on an affirmative action basis, which is deeply resented generally,
Where did you get affirmative action,
Tom? Grace,
come on,
that is
such a red herring, Tom. There's no affirmative action in this. That's absolutely crazy. It means that if someone is a homosexual, he is not going to have to hide it. It doesn't mean he's going to go attack anyone. I don't think anyone in the military is going to stand there and say, "Ooh, I may be attacked when I take my shower." That's absolutely crazy.
Bruce,
what they
the
do
answer,
outside
okay,
is
Bruce,
different.
The answer is this, that as a person, as when I walk down the street of Chicago, I don't say a sign on me, "Hey, I'm a flaming heterosexual." What these folks want is a sign which affirms their sexual preference, which makes it an affirmative action.
First of all, it's orientation, not preference.
And first of all, let me tell you what these folks want, because I'm one of these folks. And what I want is not to run around as a flaming homosexual, but not to have to lie about who I am, and not have to be able, not have to say, oh, I'm just like you, because I'm not just like you, thank God.
But nobody asks you to lie. That's the point of this dialogue that I'm trying to get across.
They do ask you to lie.
Do you believe that if the ban were to go into effect, how long, in your view, would it take for this sensitivity training to take place so that attitudes would change significantly? Because I can go back to late 60s when I was in basic training. The two most maligned groups in the United States then, and I was only in for 6 months, I was not in for 2 years or 4 years, gays and Jews. The anti-Semitism and the anti-gay attitudes in the military were rampant in the 1960s, and I would dare say they're probably as strong today.
Still there.
I don't know about the anti-Semitism. Certainly the problems of sensitivity within the military exist, and they're going to be, my only point to Rick and to Grace in this whole argument is that I'm not arguing whether it's right or wrong. I'm simply saying to you that prejudice was never reasoned into a person's mind, and it will not be reasoned out.
Exactly.
So you're not going
agree.
To be doing
Absolutely.
It by having a couple of classes on sensitivity training. It's going to take a long period of time, and it's going to take a great deal of leadership on the part of people, and it's going to take some actually revolutionary activities within
which
the
is why speaking, still.
Speaking of leadership in the United States Senate, the leader of the Senate Armed Services Committee is Sam Nunn, Democrat of Georgia, who has come out against lifting of the ban. Joining us now is Tom Baxter, who's the chief political correspondent for the Atlanta Journal and Constitution. Tom, thanks for being with us on Inside Politics.
Hi, Bruce.
How is this story playing in the state of Georgia, which has one of the largest military populations in the United States?
Well, if you can judge anything by telephone reaction, there's a great deal. We've had calls pouring in since the story really took off. And I think there is a great deal of negative reaction to the prospect of what President-elect Clinton has said he is going to do, and a great deal of solidarity with Sam Nunn in taking a skeptical approach to it.
Did the president-elect stumble by either saying what he said, or has the media run with one response to a question in the first press conference and created an issue before he really can get both feet on the ground in D.C.?
Well, that's never really happened in a transition, has it, that
No.
the media would jump on something. I think, in fact, that there is a bit of an overreaction to this. As to whether he stumbled, I think you ought to take maybe Georgia as a case study. I think that perhaps the president-elect owes more to that constituency than first meets the eye. There are more than enough gay and lesbian votes in the Atlanta metro area to make up that margin of about 15,000 votes by which Clinton won this state. And if you look at voter turnout here in Atlanta and look at how Clinton did versus how Weish Fowler, our junior senator who is now locked in a runoff with a Republican, Paul Coverdell, did, you see something striking. Fowler had been a friend of that constituency while he was a congressman from Atlanta, but in the last 6 years, in his first term in the Senate, he has voted against gay and lesbian interest on just about every issue that has come up, and there's a great deal of bitterness toward him. There are that many fewer votes for Weish Fowler in the Atlanta metro area, throwing him into a runoff with a Republican, as there are extra votes for Bill Clinton that enable him to win this state.
So this issue, if Coverdell plays it in a way that Republicans traditionally have played this card, Coverdell could be the next U.S. Senator from Georgia.
I think there are a lot of us down here who are looking at that as the very real probability, not only for that reason, but for a number of reasons that make it a great deal more difficult for Fowler to get his vote back out to the polls this Tuesday.
Bill Greener's got a question for you, Tom.
I have a question for you. If you were writing the lead on whether or not President-elect Clinton stumbled or not on taking this position early, couldn't you just say, welcome to the big leagues, Mr. President?
I think that's right. I think this is almost an inevitable thing. If he had not stumbled on this question, someone would have asked the next question.
Now, Jesse Jackson has said that in the spring of next year, he wants there to be a public march on Washington to sort of send a signal to the new president that a lot of promises were made on the issue of jobs and on a number of progressive agenda points. What happens if, as Bill Greener in his No and Tell this week suggested, that he's going to appoint Admiral Kroll to look into it, and he's going to table this? There's going to be a review. If this thing gets diffused and put off, isn't that just going to further exercise the gay and lesbian community because they feel that they will be a political scapegoat right from the get-go? Rick?
Absolutely.
So that's not necessarily so. Wait a minute.
I want to get Rick's response.
I didn't say that he was tabling it. I said he was going to name Admiral Crow to come up with his recommendations of not if, but how it could best be implemented.
Would it be controversial, do you think, since Admiral Crow has exhibited at least a very, very strongly negative side of this whole thing, that maybe the chairperson of the panel might be prejudiced, and will that sort of influence gay and lesbian hostility? Rick, I guess.
Well, I think it might have just the opposite effect in a real sense, in that by putting someone that's viewed as conservative and negative on this issue, that it will allay the fears of those who are more conservative, and the outcome will be the same. I think that's what we'll see.
I don't know if I'm still online here,
but
it seems to me that what President-elect Clinton needs desperately is another card to play. I don't think there are that many gay and lesbians in the United States who are that anxious to join the military, so we're talking about a very symbolic issue here. If he had some other sort of an action that he could take to show a positive side toward that community, I think it would go a long way toward diffusing this military.
What would you suggest it would be?
What might it be, Tom? Do you have any other suggestions?
Well,
I mean, so much of what a president can do or a president-elect can do, certainly at this point,
I think
so much of it is symbolism.
Toward AIDS research, for instance.
What about a federal law which would, in fact, I suppose, force or actually coerce our business leaders to hire gays on a non-discriminatory basis, implemented in law, federal law? Would that be effective?
Certainly delay the issue for a couple of years.
And it would put it in the lap of legislators also.
One thing that he can do, and that hasn't been mentioned a lot, but he's on record as doing it, and we expect him to do it almost immediately, is an executive order banning discrimination in federal government employment. He can do that. And that's on the table. It's being worked on. We expect that to come.
Bill said wait a couple of years. You're not going to wait a couple of years now that it's on the table.
We don't want to wait a couple of months.
Right.
I didn't say and I said that. I said that if they went for federal law, it would be delayed for a couple of years.
But if they went that route, that would not appease the gay and lesbian community. It's out on the table. They want action now.
Absolutely.
I would imagine you'd want action, but I would also imagine that from the standpoint of employment, you would want to have private employers really.
Oh, we want a federal law.
Yes, that's right. And okay. I would hope that the president-elect would cause that to be introduced.
Grace.
Well, and a task force that will show implementation is some action right now, because this is going to be over a phased-in period of time. But the other thing that he can do and is likely to do is name someone who is openly gay or lesbian to an important federal position, and someone who won't have to hide the fact that he or she is.
How about Health and Human Services? That would be ideal.
I
didn't say a cabinet position. I said an important position.
Well, I say a cabinet position. What's wrong with it?
I don't have any problem with that.
Tom Roser, in the next 4 years, you're going to become one of the great champions of gay rights. I can sense it.
I want that.
You're already planning for
the
1994 congressional elections.
I want this president to introduce legislation coercing business so that they have to add, along with minorities and everything else, affirmative action for hiring a homosexual. And I want to have that happen as part of his agenda in a State of the Union address.
And when a lot of this, what you consider liberal agenda, goes into place, like family and medical leave, you're going to see that it works out very well, and it'll help reelect
Excellent.
Bill Clinton.
Then it works out very well.
Don't run him yet, Grace. He hadn't been sworn in.
Has this issue, back to you, Tom Baxter, has this issue and the difference with the president-elect on this issue, has it hurt Sam Nunn's likelihood of being named Secretary of Defense, or don't you think that was ever likely?
I don't think it was ever really likely. I could be wrong. I think if there's a position that Sam Nunn, that could really lure Sam Nunn away from the Senate, it would be state and not defense. But I think this is nothing more than a sideshow to the consideration for either one of those jobs.
I'd like to ask you a question about the Coverdell race and as to what I think you said that a number of Georgians would want Fowler replaced for other reasons. And could you just tick them off? What are the problems there with Fowler?
Well, Fowler is kind of defined as an Atlanta liberal in Georgia politics, and in the last 6 years he has tried to move more toward the middle, more toward the Sam Nunn conservative stance. Uh-huh. And in so doing, he has had to cross a number of groups. He voted for the nomination of Justice Thomas, which alienated a lot of women's groups in the Atlanta metro area. He voted, on the other hand, against the Gulf War, which angered a lot of people who were pro-Gulf War.
He's really doing a job on
himself. He's had a difficult time walking the tightrope in the last 6 years. And he's gotten a really bad case, I must say, of Washingtonitis, or at least he's gotten that rap down here.
Would you consider that, as a matter of fact, if a Republican were to secure a victory in that state, that it would be a kind of repudiation of Mr. Clinton down there?
Well, I think it would at least be a balancing. And I think you've already seen that in the election of three new Republican congressmen from our state. The day that Bill Clinton was elected in Georgia was the best day, unquestionably, that the Republican Party has ever had in the history of Georgia.
Isn't Mr. Clinton going to be campaigning for Mr. Fowler shortly?
He will be in Macon and possibly Albany on Monday to speak for Senator Fowler, and I'm sure he will, because of the symbolic importance of that Senate seat, being kind of the one that could sort of even the score for the Republicans, I think he's going to put a lot of effort into reelecting Fowler. But he doesn't really owe Fowler that much. Fowler was kind of a come lately to the Clinton campaign also.
Okay, and on that note, we're going to say goodbye to Tom Baxter, political correspondent for the Atlanta Constitution and Journal. We thank you very much for being with us on Inside Politics. Bill Greener, Tom Roser, Rick Garcia, and Grace Kamenkiewicz are with us around the table this week. We're coming to you from Chicago on the Radio Hall of Fame Network.
If you love radio as much as I do, you'll be excited to know that starting this year, you can join the Radio Hall of Fame. Yes, you can become part of radio history yourself, helping the Radio Hall of Fame to grow into the future. Your membership means your name will be on the 1993 Honor Roll inside the Hall of Fame. And you can vote in next year's new Radio Hall of Fame Members' Choice category, where we'll honor one of your favorite personalities in our 1993 ceremony. And, of course, anytime you visit Chicago, come see the Radio Hall of Fame, see the real Charlie McCarthy, open up Fibber McGee's Closet, or join the studio audience for special Hall of Fame programs from our state-of-the-art studio. I'm inviting you to join with us tonight by calling 1-800-860-9559, where our operators will give you the details about the $30 membership. So if you want to see the best in radio remembered and honored, become a member of the Radio Hall of Fame at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Call 1-800-860-9559 for more information.
Bruce Dumont back from the Radio Hall of Fame in Chicago. Thank you very much for being with us. And if you live in the Chicagoland area, there's something very special coming up this Monday night. That is November 23rd at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. We're at the Chicago Cultural Center, Michigan Avenue at Washington Street. Starting at 6 o'clock sharp, between 6 and 8, we're going to have a media postmortem on the 1992 presidential campaign. There is no charge, but listen to the guests that you're going to have for you. Avis Lavelle, National Press Secretary of the Clinton-Gore campaign. Ed Murnane, Deputy Assistant to President George Bush and Director of All Presidential Advance. William Schneider, Veteran Political Analyst for CNN. Edwin Diamond, noted media critic for New York Magazine. George Reedy, former press secretary to President Lyndon Johnson. Steve Daly, veteran political reporter for the Chicago Tribune. Clark K. Wood from Northwestern University. Julian Cantor, one of the country's leading experts on political advertising. And yours truly, all free, starting at 6 o'clock on Monday night, November 23rd. Preston Bradley Hall at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. Everyone listening is invited free of charge. And it'll be an opportunity for people to get involved with the audience as well. So don't be bashful. Come see us. Let's go to the audience now where we have a question. Your name and your question, ma'am.
My name is Beverly Dordick. I live in Chicago. Does any panel member have a prediction as to when the next vacancy on the Supreme Court might occur, by whose retirement or death that might occur, and whom Clinton might support, might appoint?
Bill Greener, you want to tackle that first, and then Grace?
I don't think I could have any much of an educated guess. I mean, you can take a look at who the older members are and who might be retiring, and I certainly think it would be premature to even speculate on who he might name.
Grace?
Yeah, well, I think it's very likely that Justice Blackmun might announce his resignation at the end of the current term. That is not going to help people with my kind of orientation, because he will replace him with someone of similar left of what is center on the Supreme Court now. I remember when Blackmun was not considered a liberal, which is, of course, what we think of him now as. But who his appointment will be is absolutely beyond my guess. I know that
you
there is
you don't believe that Mario Cuomo is. I mean,
no,
that's
I
a
think
name,
his
does
first.
Does anybody believe that's serious?
I think he's going to. There is a woman on the bench in the federal system right now in New York who is also who is African American and who is very sharp, quite conservative for a Democratic woman, and I think she's the kind of person he's probably going to look for, because there's a lot of symbolism there, and she fits very well into the scholarly pattern.
I was hoping he'd appoint Anita Hill.
Well, I would love it, but I don't think
Wouldn't
it's very
likely.
Wouldn't
that be an interesting appointment? Let's go to the audience. Your name and your question, sir.
Hi, Tom Trenley from Chicago. Regarding gays in the military or gays anywhere in society, what does sexual preference have to do with anything? I think there's this stereotype that gays are automatic sexual offenders. And if I prefer to make love to my wife five times a day, what does that have to do with whether I qualify for a job or not? Let's keep this crazy stereotype out of the issue.
As long as you've got enough energy to do your job after five times a day. Rick, go ahead.
No, I think that's the whole point of the gay rights movement, and it isn't. It's just to treat people as human beings and not to focus in on their genitals and what they do or don't do with them. I mean, that's the bottom line.
All right, another question. Your name, sir.
My name is David Mortizavi. Mr. Roser, a few weeks back on Inside Politics, you said Michael Dukakis will go to his grave thinking, I got 3 percentage points more than Bill Clinton. With that in mind, how big is this issue, gays in the military? And if George Bush had made it into more of an issue, could he have changed the outcome of the election?
No, he could not have changed. He could not have changed the outcome of the election, because the election was determined almost exclusively on the economy.
Our telephone number is 1-800-723-8289. 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to join us, we'd love to have you with us. In fact, we're going to be joined right now from Ann in Rochester, New York. Ann, go ahead, please.
Hi. I just wanted to comment on the comment that the newscaster said before about the gay issue not there not being a lot of gays and lesbians in the world, and so it was just a symbolic issue anyway. There are many of us who are not gay, who are women or blacks or people from groups who are either have been discriminated against or who are sensitive to those who have been discriminated against, and who consider this issue, just gay bashing or discrimination against gays, as the modern-day witch burning, and that we're hoping that Governor Clinton, the reason why we went for Clinton and not Bush is that his theme is that is an inclusionary theme versus Bush's exclusionary theme. And so while, you know, we may not be gay, I think everyone is looking at this issue and looking for leadership here to institute justice where it should be, and to it's really a matter of principle and justice.
Grace?
Versus,
I think,
you know, being pro-gay.
Yeah, Anne has it right on the button, because the importance of this is the symbolism,
right,
of living up to your promises, being inclusionary. I think this is a very important move on his part, even if it causes some amount of problems in the press. It's a very important symbol to everyone who voted for him.
Speaking of symbols,
I think the problems in the military are worse than the problems in the press, Grace.
I want to get your response in, and then everyone around the table. Americans voted for change. 62% wanted change. I'm not sure that 62% wanted a drop in the ban on gays. However, is it best for Bill Clinton to keep all of his promises made to the progressive wing of the Democratic Party and their constituencies? Is it best for him to do it all right now in the first year and get it over with, so that in 3 years from now it's old hat? I mean, give Hillary Clinton whatever job she wants, give her a high visibility talking about whatever issue she wants, and get it all out of the way and send the real strong signal, folks, you want to change, you're going to get it, as opposed to trickle down changes over the years. What do you think, Bill?
Well, I would... You know, let's face facts. I don't think that he can do all of the progressive promises at one time anyway, but the real thing is, if your question is whether he should keep his promises, I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, and you're making the assumption that the public isn't going to like him keeping his promises. That's nuts.
I'm not making that assumption at all.
Well,
you're
making it sound like he's got to get him out of the way, because then the real business of his presidency comes to fore.
If we know at least half the people don't want him to keep his promises.
You're talking about appeasing. Appeasing is the word you used before. Appease the progressive wing of the party. That's the wrong term.
You do have to appease the progressive wing of the party. You got Jesse Jackson, who's already said he's going to march on Washington next spring to make sure that Bill Clinton is keeping his campaign promises. So I'm not the only one that's concerned about the president.
No, I don't think you're the only one, Bruce. As a matter of fact, I would think that Mr. Clinton would be wise to get all the very exotic liberal things that he promised halfway around the country in order to get in with every group, every special interest group, try to get them out of the way as soon as possible, because he's going to have to run again, I suppose, as a centrist, and all these things are going to have to be taken care of early.
Rick?
I think it's going to be very, very hard for him to, quote, appease the progressive element of the Democratic Party for this reason. I'm part of that progressive element of the Democratic Party. And, Bruce, you know that
and
I have serious...
Like you left New York, and you were not
absolutely
wild about
and as and I will say it, I say it right up front, that as a delegate to the Democratic National Convention, I did not cast my vote for Bill Clinton. And I have serious reservations about Bill Clinton. I'm pleased that he seems to be moving in the right direction. I don't think he's going to... I think it's going to take a lot of work to keep him true to his promises. That's what I think.
Let's go to Maury in Thomasville, Georgia. You're on Inside Politics. Go ahead.
I was just calling to speak on the issue of gays in the military.
All right.
And I have I think that gays should be I think gays should be in the military, but I have a personal disagreement with homosexuality. I'm a, you know, Christian, and mm-hmm. I have a, you know, personal disagreement, but I think they should have a right. So,
and know. I think that's a very mainstream thought. I mean, that's whether you are gay or not, you know, that doesn't make any difference.
I'd like to question the caller. No one denies gays have a right to serve in the military. The question is, self-declared gays, do you favor that?
So what you're saying is lying gays.
I'd like to have him answer. Just,
but can you clarify your point? You say they have a right to. I'm a little bit confused. Well, they have a right to be in. They have a right to be in. Then why are we having this argument?
That's right.
Well, the thing is that I think gays, it shouldn't really became a big issue, just like abortion. I didn't think abortion should have became, such a big issue, because, it becomes a lot of controversy, and I think that's probably what happened to the homosexual issue.
I'm trying to get precision, but I'm not getting it.
What Maury is saying is that it's none of anyone's business and butt out of our private lives, be like the Republican Party is supposed to be, keep out of personal business.
I'm intrigued, Bruce, that Ms. Kaminkiewicz is interested in what the Republican Party should be.
You're the ones, the Republican
Party. Well, you're trying to set the agenda for the Democrats.
Wait a minute, we can't have this prejudice, Grace. You've already come out against it.
The Republican Party.
Bill from Rochester, New York, you're on Inside Politics. Go ahead.
Yes, I spent 5 years in the military during World War II, and I would advise Mr. Clinton to follow Harry Truman's lead when he integrated the armed forces. My recollection of those days was that there was plenty of prejudice against blacks, and it continued. But people knew enough to behave properly. And I see it as a matter of the command structure and simply laying down the rules and laying out proper punishment when people misbehave.
Yeah, when you get into the practical aspect of it, Bill, I mean, people that are in the military, at least the professional military people, they're used to taking orders. I mean, is this really going to be a big problem? If the commander-in-chief says do it, and the battalion commander says do it and follow the law, and this is the way we're going to do it, I mean...
You cannot order prejudice out of anybody's mind. You can order compliance with it, and I'm sure that will happen. And I keep going back, I mean... We seem to be fighting something that no one else has any experience at except me, and that is, I didn't say they weren't going to do it. I simply said it was going to be extremely difficult, and the fact that we sit around talking about whether it's a right or a wrong or that we should do it or shouldn't do it is really it's not important, because the thing is that it's always easy for someone to say this wrong has to be corrected when you're not the one being affected.
Yeah,
I'm going to ask Rick a question. Do you acknowledge, as Bill just stated, that this is going to be a real tough thing? That this is not going to happen without a great deal of pain?
Absolutely. It's going to be a very tough thing. It may cause some problems, but that doesn't mean that we shouldn't do it.
And 5 years from now, the problem is going to be more women in the military than gays in the military, because there are more heterosexuals there to misbehave than they're going to be homosexual.
Does anyone at this table think that if this ban were to be dropped that there would be any significant drop in either enlistments or in early retirements or any significant shift in the makeup numerically of the armed services? Bill, is that a problem on the horizon as you see it?
I think that you would probably find that at the outset that you would have some significant senior resignations or early retirements, but I don't think that that's the point, and I don't think it will have any effect on the overall makeup.
We've talked a lot this week about various symbols, and I want to get into something I alluded to just a few moments ago. Bill Clinton out there jogging around, stopping at McDonald's, going down to Georgia Street in Washington, D.C. on his first day in the nation's capital with the national media, showing a different side of Washington, D.C. beyond the monuments. Tom Roser, so much of what presidential leadership is symbolic. I mean, are we going to have someone who is as every bit a master of the media and symbolism as your great hero, Ronald Reagan?
I suppose we'll have someone who's every bit a master of early symbolism as President Carter, who walked down Pennsylvania Avenue. I equate that with that kind of ephemeral thing.
Bill?
I don't think that he's so far shown any of the ability to control press conferences with near the plume that either Kennedy or Reagan did. I mean, I just don't think that he has the ability to use humor at the right time or any of those things.
I think he probably doesn't have as good a sense of humor as Kennedy had, but I think his ability, I mean, his mind is like a computer. He can answer any question.
So was Mr. Carter's.
But I think he answers questions with great aplomb. I was very impressed with his press conferences personally, and he got a lot of favorable reviews on it. And I think as the situation develops, he's going to get very adept at this.
Does it raise real or false hopes to those who reside in that area of Washington, D.C., that things are going to change significantly? And can the president make the changes fast enough to make a difference in their lives?
He raises expectations, which is what Democratic liberals always do, and they fail, and then there is a disenchantment.
I think he can show some progress.
It is not only Democratic liberals. Ronald Reagan went to Bedford-Stuyvesant in 1980, and it isn't much better, if not worse,
that
today.
That wasn't the smartest thing he ever did, either.
What he can do is to set a tone. And what he can personally do isn't that great, but he can set a tone so that others who see it are inspired by it or take note of it, and that is the important thing that he can do.
Well, he can certainly set a tone. I don't think he's going to make any difference in the inner city of Washington, D.C.
Oh, okay. Let's talk 4 years from now.
That's pretty depressing, Tom. No difference? Do you agree with that? No difference?
No difference.
Okay, on that note, we want to say thank you. On that rather depressing note, we say thank you to Tom Roser, president of the City Club of Chicago, Grace Kamakiewicz, who is a member of the steering committee of the National Women's Political Caucus, Rick Garcia, director of Catholic Advocates for Lesbian and Gay Rights, and Bill Greener, former deputy press secretary to President Gerald Ford, and also Tom Baxter, chief political correspondent for the Atlanta Journal, who joined us this week as well. Inside Politics is a Jenny B. production, produced in association with the Radio Hall of Fame. Steve Ryan is our executive producer. Beth Scanlon is our associate producer. Sam Yeomans engineered this program. We'll be back next week at this same time. I hope you can be with us. Until then, this is Bruce Dumont saying so long from Chicago.